Jeffrey Alfred is an adventurous sort. He left his Wyoming home in the late 1970s with very little money and began traveling in Asia. Funded his travels by smuggling gold and hawking jewelry before meeting another restless spirit named Naomi Duguid. He met her on a Tibetan rooftop in 1985. The two vagabonds got married, had two sons, and turned their love of Asia and its food into a career of travel and writing and photography. Six gorgeous books and two James Beard Cookbook of the Year awards later, Alfred and Duguid are thought of as culinary anthropologists, collecting recipes and photographs from distant villages, from rugged mountain settlements, and other rarely visited Asian kitchens. Jeffrey Alfred is going to deliver the College of Liberal Arts annual lecture at UNH Durham this evening, and he's joining us now in the studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So tell me about that. You know, when you and the woman who did become your wife, I guess you call her Nom. Everyone calls her Nom.
But now we're no longer together.
I know. I understand that. So, well, that will be a little bit of a narrative later, but I'm wondering how you began this journey, because neither of you set out to be cookbook authors, did you?
Oh, no. I don't think anyone sets out to be a cookbook writer. But I started reading cookbooks when I'm a teenager. And then at a young age, I'm living in India. And I was always just very interested in food. And I sort of thought it was a bit of a problem because other people were getting real jobs. And, you know, I wrote a master's thesis, a nonfiction master's thesis on the only things I knew about, which were food, travel, and drugs. one thing leads to another, I think. And so we first, what helped us start freelancing was I bicycled from Tibet to Nepal in 1985. So I was the first person to ever cross the Himalaya with a bicycle.
Wow.
So I got to write for bicycle magazines. Mm-hmm. That was, and I thought, well, I know more about food than I know about bicycles. Mm-hmm. And then I just started writing for food magazines and then eventually get to do books.
Well, the books are so beautiful. I'm looking at just three of them that we've got here. You've written six altogether, Beyond the Great Wall. This is all sort of we tend to think, I think, of China, and it's especially talked about monolithically, you mm-hmm. know, in American culture. And Chinese food and Thai food, they're all sort of lumped in together. Is part of your goal here to pick out the regions, to pick out the differences in different kinds of foods?
Well, I think we've always been interested in indigenous populations and people without borderless people. And so the working on the great, that book was really great fun for us because we're talking 300 million people. It's
right.
Not like small.
And they're
small
not
population.
All Han Chinese, you know, that's what we all
Not
hear.
At all, right? But I've never, for example, been to Beijing. You know, I've been to China a million times and I've never been to Beijing. My interest are in those Western and in Yunnan province because many of those people I know from living in northern Thailand. So to see, like, for example, the Akha, or there's 6 million Akha, you know, in the world. But when you're in Thailand, you only think there's, you know, a couple thousand, and you go into Yunnan province, and there's just these big, big populations of what I call tribal people.
Uh-huh. I also remember, I think, a segment in the book in the Uyghur region, which is the northern. Mm-hmm. Somebody flinging noodles, learning how to fling noodles.
Yeah, remarkable food, the Uyghurs. I'd never been up, I'd read about Tuvan people.
Mm-hmm. And then like the throat singers, that's
yes,
what
the
I
throat
think
singers,
of.
Yeah. And there were several villages up basically on the Siberian border in China. So all surrounded by Kazakhs. And it was really lovely to get to these villages. No throat singing there though, actually.
That's unfortunate. Go all the way to Tuba or whatever. But, you know, your books, I mean, they're a world apart, I think, from a lot of other books because there is this, I don't know, do you mind that term, cultural anthropologist? It makes sense to me.
It makes sense. Especially, I don't never know what to call myself, freelance, you know. Like where I am now, it's cultural anthropology. You know, is one part of it, but it's also the food is just so fascinating. Mm-hmm. I've never been in a place like this where people are so close to their food, and you know, really subsistence. Even though it's in Thailand, it's you know, These are subsistence villages.
That's where you are now.
That's where I am now.
In this northeastern village. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that fascinated me, there was a profile of you and your former wife in The New Yorker a couple of years ago. I guess it was 2008. And there's
Jane,
a point.
Jane Kramer.
Yes, right. Jane Kramer. Right. And you have two sons together,
yeah,
who are now, what, out of college? They're grown
no,
up,
they're
right?
Both doing.
Both in college?
PhDs.
Oh,
in
no kidding.
Analytical philosophy, right? We haven't been able to have a conversation for years.
I guess not. But one of the sons says something like, "You guys, when you go into a kitchen, you know, you're sitting there at the elbow or kitchen. I'm using that term loosely. You don't take notes. You don't do recordings. You often don't even know the language. You just figure it out. How do you piece those together, those recipes?"
Well, I'm a little bit anti-recipe at this stage because I think sometimes they make, like for us, we can only work with very simple recipes because people don't have the ingredients or they don't have the taste for that. So we're always looking for really simple recipes. But then when you translate it into this style of book, it makes something simple look very difficult. People get intimidated, you know. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying to, what I call, like, well, I'm not putting tablespoons of anything, but I'm describing how to kill a chicken. You know, I'd never really killed a chicken before, or how to cook crickets or grasshoppers.
How do you think that's going to go over for the American food-loving audience?
Well, no, but
Canadian?
Like I say in the beginning, I say, if you've just been back from Thailand and you really like Pad Thai, this is not the book for you. So it's more of a, and I've always wanted to do this, because the first book we worked on was flatbreads, and this was quite exotic material for the cookbook world. And so I always, when you make them look too much like recipes, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, these look like travel books. They're fantastic photos, little stories that you tell you know, a grandmother holding a baby on her knee and, you know, having it just go to the bathroom on the floor on a piece of paper, you know, that she could collect. The things that you learn from these different kind of places. But I'm actually curious now about cooking crickets. How do you?
Crickets are so interesting because we eat grasshoppers and crickets. But the crickets cook in their own juice. So you have a hot wok, and you maybe have a kilo of crickets, and you have to take the intestinal tract out of each cricket. So it helps if you have long fingernails. But then when the wok is hot, you put the crickets in. And just like a mushroom starts to lose its juice, the crickets start to lose their juice, and then you cover it, and they cook in their own body fat. So many people think that the crickets were fried, but there's no oil in there except for the
I wouldn't think of a cricket as a juicy
but it critter. Is very but like grasshopper you have to fry, but the crickets are more like steamed. It's subsistence. They kind of, so like there are a lot of ants. One of my daily problems is like mosquitoes are not particularly a problem, but ants can be. There are certain really mean ants. But one big red ant that lives in mango trees, like the first time I was aware, I had hundreds on me and they were biting. They really bite. But that doesn't stay very long, you know. But whoa, when you first. So anyway, the one best thing about these big red ants is that they have eggs, a nest with eggs. And so you take a long piece of bamboo and you shake out the nest, and it's like I think of it as a caviar, kind of, you know. It's delicious, and you make a Thai salad out of these red ant eggs.
Well, you know, we have just about a minute left, and I'm just wondering, you know, you're going to be giving the talk to the liberal arts.
Yes.
What are you going to?
I don't know.
How are you going to appeal to these kids? You know, talking about.
I made a
about...
mistake. I went and Googled, you know, and I thought, I think I'm the first non-academic. You know, and everybody reads these papers and stuff. I don't do that. So
it
really
sounds that way.
My plan is to look who's there. If it's who's there, because I have two different things I would like to talk about depending on who is there. Travel. I'm going to talk about travel and about what one learns through travel as an academic pursuit.
Well,
right?
You have certainly immersed yourself in it.
It's
a way of life right now,
I
would imagine.
Life, yes.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, and have a great time tonight.
Me. Yeah.
It will certainly be entertaining, I would imagine. Jeffrey Alford, He and his ex-wife now have written 6 cookbooks together. He's currently living in Thailand and at work on a new book. But he is in New Hampshire to deliver the College of Liberal Arts annual Holden Lecture this evening at Mirkland Hall at UNH in Durham. So you can find details, location, and more on his intrepid travels and culinary history at wordofmouthradio.org.